Okay, and we're going live. Yo, what's up, people? It's the Solar Kid, and this is my podcast, The Other Side of the Sun. Today, we have the ethereal Muti Mutsolase Musafiri, dancer, choreographer, art director, musician, actor, quantum alchemist, planetary architect, new earth 5D activations, information integration, flow engineer, and all of that good shit too. You tell him, people. You tell him, bro. Tell him who you are. Tell him what you do. Tell him who is Muti.
Give thanks to all the people that are listening across the world. Yes, it's pivotal times right now to be alive. We are truly in this transitional period. What does it mean in this moment to harness our power? We have just had Lion's Gate, my brother. That was a big thing as well. And this was a moment where I was deeply called into another renewal, another rebirth of myself, where I could step forward beyond just the superficial aspects of my being that I had built up within my culture. You know, yes, of course, I'm a multidisciplinary. I am an actor. I am a singer. I'm a dance artist and choreographer, but then to be able to ascend to the reintegration of what my spirit is being called for in this timeline now, and how I can be a beacon and a new archetype as a divine masculine truth in this setting is where we begin to invite these multi-dimensional perspectives.
Yes. I'm hoping that we can delve deep into, like, you know, that psyche and this understanding, because for obviously a lot of people, you know, it might seem like, you know, what's this guy on about? He's just talking about some hippie bullshit and whatever. So how can we, like, you know, like, how can we explain this and how can we, like, you know, relate this to people in a way that anybody can understand? You know what I mean? Because I get it. Like, I consider myself to be quite spiritual and whatever, even though, you know, that, and like, you know, this podcast is about a self-discovery, you know, I mean, me finding out about different things, and I mean, that's particularly why I wanted to speak to you, because, you know, in that I find it very intriguing, like, you know, the way you interact, like the way you interact with your, you know, your spirituality, the way you interact with people, you know, just your general consciousness and nature. I mean, like, people I find are drawn to you, man. Like, I performed with you. If you don't know, people, I've been on stage with his brother many times. I've been his player. I've been his producer for like what, 2 years now. But another level, on a brother level, this is my G, man, my guy. You know, been through a lot, and I'm just hoping that you can share some stuff. So, like, before we get into the deep, like, spiritual stuff, let's delve a little bit into, like, you know, young Muti. Was young Muti always like this? Was young Muti always a spiritual, engaging being who's just full of love and light and out there, outspoken? What were you like as a teenager, as a child, man?
Wow. Well, give thanks, man. I've been on a few different moments in this environment, and I just want to say one time, Mr. Solake, thank you for getting me on. That was probably one of the best introductions I've ever experienced in myself. Most encompassing and inviting for all sides of my being to come out. So give thanks for that. Man knows me. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is. So, young Mutz. You know what I mean? Like, if you take it back to the genesis of my creation, we're looking at my father, who is of the Hutu and Tutsi tribe, coming from Burundi and Rwanda, the central eastern parts of Africa that have gone through so much, you know, there's war-torn experiences that exist in my bloodline, you know. There's genocide that has been perused by some of the colonialism that has come from the West, Belgium, who had come and torn apart, Germany, who had torn apart from the people from inside. But, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Exactly. They have infiltrated the minds of some of the purest aspects of Africa. And, you know, I give thanks because my father was able to grow up being up to about 7-8 years old, where he could walk across valleys, across mountains to arrive at school. He could walk up and climb up a tree and see the mountains that were in Congo and see the sense of perspective, see the sense of viewpoint and prospect beyond where he was in that moment. And of course, through these times of war, it meant that, you know, some of our family had to reach out, had to expand. He migrated to Belgium, to Canada. And my father had the gift of being able to study afterwards in Belgium, but really have the root and the cultivation of his instincts in Africa. And on the other hand, there's my mother, you know, my mother, who is a beautiful South Korean woman who was adopted at a very young age. And there was an incredible history there where Koreans experienced a deep sort of Han, they called it, which is a deep sense of cultural shame, which really innovated their whole culture to start to mobilize and galvanize itself in a completely different way. So where I'm existing from these two polarized cultures that have experienced, you know, grief, deep grief of a culture, deep shame of a culture, but being able to rise as the underdogs through that and emerge as these new transcended aspects of themselves is my origins of my being, you know. And I give thanks for that, because I grew up in a world now where they were able to migrate from Belgium to London because they wanted to create their own environment where they could cultivate the lives that they wanted away from their families, away from the sense of what they had to keep themselves and limit themselves to, and wanted to experience their own freedom. So that in itself, in origins, I've been born out of survivors. I've been born out of people who are able to see beyond the environment that they were in. I've been born from people who have been able to transcend boundaries and limitations that were put for them and discover their own way of being. So I give a lot of thanks to my parents, because being in London, you know, it's kind of sometimes hard when you're in your young days, you know, you're isolated. Like, I grew up with not much actual physical family there, you know? And you know what it's like, fam. You know what it's like being African in London when, you know, you're feeling the ripples and the vibration of the African super consciousness, but at the same time, there's no one that you're actually saying, yo, that's my fam. But then you realize something deeply embedded in your being, in your blood, that reminds you that it does take a village to raise a child. And I very much grew with every single elder, every single family member that I ever stayed with, who nurtured me in my younger years as a teacher to me, as a parental figure, where I was raised by the village. And then that allowed me to be much more colorful, much more varied in my being. And that also made me very hungry for what was this sense of family, what was this sense of community, especially being someone outside of its original habitat.
What was that like being mixed race, bro? I mean, like, it's two completely different. Like, it's, you got the Congo and then you've got Korea, bro. Like, I mean, that is like two
almost, Burundi, isn't it? Burundi and Korea, yeah.
Burundi and Korea. That's like two opposite ends of the spectrum. Even though for me personally, I feel like Asia and Africa have so many things that are very similar in terms of culture and tradition. Not many people would like see it that way. But you know, what was it like? Like, I mean, London is quite diverse, but then there still are like cliques, you know what I mean? Like, like yard man, you know what I mean? Caribbean man, or then there was the African man, then there was like,
So yeah, exactly that. Like, you know, you're wondering. Go ahead.
Did you grow up in Camden or where?
I was born at Royal Free Hospital in Hampstead Heath.
Yeah.
But I was born with a Belgian passport, so I was born speaking French and English. And a lot of people don't realize this, but when you grow up bilingual, when you grow up speaking a language at home, but then you go to school and you experience yourself through English, you sometimes have this sense of being out of place because you're having to learn a language that's not your own tongue. It's not your own mother tongue, which means that my intelligence, you know what I mean, my adaptability, my level of survival instinct, which I talk a lot about in my own practice, very much was attuned to how I can learn from each person as a sense of like mirror, who can inform me about how I can improve and be better received in my communication. So yeah, I was able to assimilate with a lot of different cultures, but where I saw the Orientals, you know, I'm like, yo, when you do the research and you check out how innovative Koreans are, and you realize your mom was adopted, you see how innovative Koreans are, you're like, wow, that's in my blood. That's in my blood. That instinct is in my being. You see the Africans and you're like, wow, you see how much kind-hearted they are and how how much that compassionate nature and abundant nature is within them. And you see that you can operate like that in London sometimes, but people don't know how to take that. People don't know how to take that sometimes. You want to shut it down because they're not ready for that level of openness. And that's where I feel where I was able to somehow transition from being this like child of the village that people used to say to me when I was a bit older. They'd be like, yo, when I used to see you as a kid, you're always smiling, you're always so loved, always bringing up so much light into spaces. I know, it's still there, you know, it's still there. And like, obviously, you know, in origins of that, like, man came from a divorced family, you know what I mean? I had my parents divorced, so I experienced that on it. Like, this is probably the origins of my spiritual nature, because Muti, as you know, in Bantu tribe, with the Sangomas, the Muti is the medicine you get from the witch doctor, you know, the Sangoma, the herbalist medicine. And that's something that I was imbued in my spirit, in my becoming of my being. And to see the two representatives of my family go through such a tearing, a real ripping of that, meant that I energetically absorbed all of that fallout as a sense of wanting to heal, as wanting to be there for my mother and my father. And that meant that, you know, this eczema that I have, this rare skin condition, actually went into my eyes. And it meant that I was temporarily blind 2 times. And not a lot of people know this, yeah? I was temporarily blind 2x in this eye and 1x in this eye because I was so receptive to the energies. Yeah, I was so receptive to the energies once at 3 years old and once at 7 years old. And when that happened, it meant that I was actually blind, you know? Like, you're in a hospital, 2 tears now, you know? You're in a hospital and you think, yeah, all right, cool. I can still cope with this. But you're literally, like, you're having to depend on other senses in your being. You're not able to take in the retinas, taking the images through the eyes, but you have to hear a space. You have to hear the echoes of how sound informs you of this space. You have to listen and smell, listen with your sense of smell about where food is when you are hungry. And that really tuned in to some of my feral natures, some of my more primal instincts. And that's why I talked about so much about this survivalist instinct and where I've come from in that, because it really adapted my nature to excel to another breed of what I would call human instincts now. So that, I'd say, is probably one of the biggest tipping points of what has emerged me to start going into these altered states of being and start to listen into how consciousness is informing me of the nature of energy, purely because of the limitation, purely because of the pain I've had to go through, purely because of the trauma that I've had to rise through. That has meant that I've been able to transcend some of my darkness and arrive with more light to give into the world. And I would say that's for anyone who has experienced their own darkness, that they are crucial opportunities for you to master another sense of your own light scale and your own ability to give that love, that real transcendent tool that allows you to really expand your being and experience another capacity of your own sensorial ability.
So when did that process begin? Like, that process of, like, I call it basically self-understanding or, like, you know, self-realization. And, like, what were some of the processes that you actually went through? Because I know, like, you do Qigong, you know what I mean? You studied art and dance and, you know what I mean? You're very versed with, like, you know what I mean? The flow states and energy and, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how did that start? When did that start? And what kind of practices did you study or learn to, you know?
It's funny that, yeah, because when I talk about the sense of family, when I talk about the sense of community, I talk about what's really been activated in my DNA, which I now later know as epigenetics, knowing that we have these unique skill sets that our parents have transcended, you know. We talk about with epigenetics how you can encode part of your genome strands with either your most traumatic experiences or your most transcendent experiences. And this can unlock some of these deep, deep, deep gifts that you have been given from birth. And until you can have that cracking open, then you realize the full capacity of what you've been given, really been gifted in your being. So through these survivalist experiences, I was trialed and I had to overcome these senses and arrive into these new perspectives. But where I went to also in the sense of tribe, in the sense of like primal understanding, was this sense of gangs. You know, I grew up in East London. I grew up in Hackney, one of the worst boroughs. I grew up in Finchley, which people would think is suburbia, but actually there were so many estates that had their own, that, you know, Canaan, Frontline, you know, we had Hood Bangers, you know, we had all of these people who were the elders in the tribes who were initiating some of the young people. And bless for me, you know, I was able to operate as this young person with a lot of light, with a lot of smiles and big hair. So the elders would always go to me, you know, you're the one who's meant to make it out. You're the talented one. You're the one who's got the gifts. You're the one who has to make it out for all of us. And I'm thinking, yo, yo, yo. So everyone was always holding it as a sense of tribe, as a sense of pack. And that's what I fell in love with, this sense of community, because I'll be real with you. Like, I'm so loyal to my core. I'm, you know, Chinese zodiac, I'm a dog with those aspects of it. I'm loyal to my core with people who hold me, who love me, and that I extend that. So when I was in the gangs, I got in a few sticky moments where we were in a couple tiffs and taffs with different boroughs and different groups, and there was a lot of standoff moments and some moments that I was actually, you know, what people would call caught slipping, and I actually got jumped a few times. And these moments were moments where, like, I experienced full, like, beatings, you know, like stampouts, you know, beef, like rumbles and that, people, glass bottles, all of them things. And when you experience that, there's a level of your own innocence that has to emerge from that space. Like, you know, this divine innocence, this innocence that I have in my being, this gift that I have, had to be challenged in these environments. And I have to become a product of that environment and learn my warrior, you know, learn what it meant to be a warrior in this concrete jungle. And these were the things that allowed me to really understand my strengths and allowed me to understand some of my more protective natures that were willing to overcome certain things. So yeah, I got caught in a couple gang situations. I got caught with a couple moments where, you know, we was trying to make a couple two bits of money, two operations and all of that. And I found myself at a point in my life where I said to myself, like, you can either go this direction now, yeah, or you can be everything that you were designed to be for this world. You can be the enhancement that God has gifted you with these tools that you are here to enable into this world. You can be that being, or you can decide to flush all of that down a drain and get caught up in some other stuff that is some trap mentality that's not meant for you. But ultimately, that was your training ground. That was your terrain to master the abilities that allow you to now face the world that we are in. So it doesn't knock you off balance. So you have your spear. You have your spear to direct your energy forward. You have your shield, you know, to be able to protect yourself in that manner. And through that journey, I arrived in art. You know, I arrived at this sense of, like, how can I express the pain that I've experienced in my being through something without language, coming from this French, from this English, you know. So I always knew from a young age I wanted to do acting. From early, I always knew I was an actor, I was a performer in that way. But then there was a moment I did a project with 120 kids at the Royal Albert Hall with the London Symphony Orchestra for Dance Umbrella. Big up Dance Umbrella for doing projects to get so many diverse kids into projects of contemporary dance. And when I said to my mom, look, mom, like, you know, I was always in sports, I was doing circus, I was always doing kind of performative things. But then when my mom saw me at the Royal Albert Hall perform that way, costume, lights, whole orchestra, she said to me, if you really want to do this, you need to get yourself that technique. You need to get that preparation, you know? And I really do not, I cannot push it, stress it enough to some of the young people coming up. It really, to learn the techniques that I've previously created structures for people to now understand the building blocks. Yes. Really understand the building blocks that have happened in that art form so that you know how you can transcend them afterwards. Same way we've had conversations about, you know, the elements of jazz, the elements of classical music, being able to understand those mechanisms and then be able to play with them in new forms. So I had to learn ballet. I had to learn contemporary dance. And it was funny because I was at that time, like, quite hood, you know, I was still quite hood and I was still quite, like, hip-hop in my freedom. So these times I was like, you need to wear a jockstrap in ballet. And you're there like, what? I'm wearing a thong. Why am I wearing a male thong, though? Why am I coming in and wearing a male thong, you know? And then you're like, no, bro, no, I'm not doing it. And then you realize that the real, like, trust me, cuz, you know what I mean? You're wearing tights, cuz.
I wear a very similar thing, bro, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know. And obviously, you're coming back to the hood. You're coming back to your boys, and they're like, bruh. You know, like, a couple of your band, and they're like, yo, you want to go and ride out to this place and do a couple of things? And you're like, no, sorry, I've got contemporary dance on Saturday morning. I need to be on point because I'm training. And they're like, yeah. But still, if these men ride out on us now, you need to be ready. And I'm like, yeah, I'm still ready for that, of course. But I'm just letting you guys know I got some priorities right now. And they're like, all right, do it. Go ham. You know, and there was a couple of sticky moments. There was beef. And then the next day I was going into contemporary dance and having this therapy where I could be much more gentle with my being. I could listen into what was happening in my soul, the force of my soul, and what wanted to emerge, where the seat of my soul wanted to express something that I couldn't yet comprehend in my mind. And it became this kind of therapeutic environment. It became this realm for me to listen and deeper into where I felt knotted inside of my being, where I wanted to untangle some of these fractals that had previously come from some of my ancestral traumas, that had previously come from some of the things I inherited from my parents and their pain and the things that I had to go through. And it became this source of my medicine. It became the way in which I could listen into the true medicine that I was in my spirit and what I'm designed for. And I give thanks to a man called Lee Smichael, who looked at me in the moment I auditioned for Laban Center for Advanced Training in Greenwich, and looked at me and said, right, this kid, you know, he could be all types of wildness, but I love his enthusiasm. I love his energy. And I want to give him the chance to be what he can be. And it really, all it takes is someone to look deeper into someone in the moment and say, look, I know that there's light in this being, and they just need a bit of nurture. They need a bit of guidance. They need a bit of watering, and they could become something exceptional. And that cracked me open. That gave me a lifeline. That gave me a space for me to balance this other life, you know. I was, by the ages of 17, 18, I was emceeing in Dalston. I was doing squat raves with Unconscious Collective in Hackney, and then also being in a couple gang things. At the same time, I was having my temple, big up Hackney, you know what I'm saying? And having my temple, having my solitude, having an opportunity to find my own mastery and where my vibration was on a Saturday, on a Sunday, with Shoreditch Youth Dance, with these dance companies being residents in Richmix, and then also doing ballet on a Monday and Thursday. So I was having this regular practice of coming back into my vibration, coming back into my healing, that allowed me to then face some of the kind of dangerous environments of London with much more calm head, much more aware, less impulsive, more responsive, really allowing my feet to be present in what my possibilities are rather than feeling that I was lacking a possibility, which is often, I feel, that happens in the trap mentality. You feel you don't have as many possibilities. And when I was able to install that, you know what I'm saying? When I was able to install that, it really gave me this other sort of training, this other sort of practice that then, you know, unlocked some of these later natures of altered states of consciousness, transcendent modes where, you know, from a young age, I was engaging in professional processes of artistic development. You know, we were making at 16, from 17 and 18, with Shoreditch Youth Dance at Richmix, we had a residency, so we were training every week. We had the opportunity to make a piece that was up to 45 minutes, and we were able to take that to Stockholm Fringe Festival. We were able to develop pieces, Make Your Road by Walking, asking us, who are we in these realms? And I remember I said, like, it was the first time I really started unlocking what information was as well. It was like, at Mutti, holla, I'm cursed with trying to understand the perception of time on a daily basis. And that was like my own paradox, bro. Like, that was my paradoxic view of where I was balancing this life of the streets, of being like this MC in a game, being this cultural innovator, and at the same time being this like almost this innocent child that just needed a space to express its artistic form. And when I was able to blossom there, I realized how powerful I could become and how much I could really charge the artistic scene and challenge some of the old building blocks that were for me becoming quite outdated. You know, came into a stage where it was like, what's modern? You know, what's contemporary? You know, they say contemporary is a sign of the times. You know, it is something that reflects the now. And what we were learning in contemporary dance at that time, for me, was quite outdated, was limited. So I was always searching for where the newness was. I was searching for that. And hip-hop was the thing that really was able to culture that in myself. It was allowing me, through the church of what hip-hop was as a spirituality, it was allowing me to really come back to the roots, come back to the community. You know, some of the elements we had in gang, some of all these things, but really come back into the church of hip-hop, bro. You know what I mean? Where's the MC? Where's the master of the ceremonies? You know, where are the breakers doing all this experimental flow artistry? You know, where are the graffiti artists who are bringing their visions that are in their pineal gland, their third eye, manifesting that with the brushes, with the delicacy? You know, where were the elements of the DJ scratching stuff and blending and actually literally like sonically transcending these elements of time by warping space and time through the music? And when you're experiencing the vortex of that, you know, you experience the transformational vortex of that and remind yourself, yo, you come from that, essentially. You come from that. You realize the empowerment that you have within what has cultured you to become who you are now. Mm. And that, all of that, were the things that really were bringing forth my spirituality, to know that I'm empowered by all these cultures that have enriched me. And then that was the tipping point that allowed me to go to everywhere else.
So just before we go like to the spirituality, one more thing. Like, so what were some of your like career highlights? Like, I mean, I know you've done some big dance stuff. You've been in a few famous videos and stuff. I won't mention names on this. You can let people know about that, man. But yeah, you've done a few things, man. Do you wanna reel off some highlights?
Yeah, so hell yeah, you know. This journey, motivation, activations for the nation. I tell you right now, it takes a little bit of love. It takes a little bit of guidance and nurture to water a being, and they will show you the excelment of what a desire to grow can do into the world. You know what I mean? There is no limitation you can't achieve if you put your mind to it. You know, you are the embodiment of what you say. So I was ready to go. I was ready to go to the stars and back. I was ready to shoot to the moon and land on them stars, you know, and I did. So, you know, along the way, give thanks, you know, last year, I was in a movie. I was in a movie called Cats.
Oh, just by the way.
You know, getting to work with stars like Jason Derulo. You know, some of the biggest black icons in our generation, being able to work with him in a dramaturging environment where I can offer some of my artistic development to him and how he articulates scenes, being able to work with people like Taylor Swift and being able to share some of my meditational practice with her and being able to offer meditation to Taylor Swift was incredible. I was able to pray with Jennifer Hudson, you know what I mean? Praying with Jennifer Hudson and meeting in the spirit with someone who is top, top, top there. And you know, when you're meeting with, as a child of God, there's no difference. We're still meeting each other and being like, yeah, it's love. You know what I mean? Working with my heroes like Les Twins, you know, working with them, Idris Elba, James Corden, Ian McKellen, Judi Dench, Rebel, we would have let them a lot, you know, and being able to work on a production of 100 million to suddenly see that level of scalability is incredible. But not to mention, you know, I've been able to choreograph things like Sampa the Great's music video, Jay Lawn, Sonny Gray, creative directing that. I've been able to assist the direction of Saul Nash and assist in choreograph fashion shows that have made it to Fashion Week that have been written about on Vogue, Forbes, ID Magazine as the heroes of Fashion Week, changing the format of how we see fashion and what that the containers, the coliseums are of how we even receive that medium. And I say all of those things, you know, they come from my understanding of coming back to my ritual, coming back to the being that I am, and bringing that through my artistry, bringing the element of spirituality into my art form. And that actually set me apart, that took my artistry to the next level. And now, even to the point where I've been able to be part of, you know what I'm saying? Big up for that.
That defines you, bro. Like, literally, like, there's such a thin line between someone who talks the talk and someone who lives their entire experience. You know what I'm saying? And that's why. Didn't you also go? You had to go and judge some competition in, was it Vietnam or something, or some dance?
Oh yeah. So trust me, bud. I was able last year, one of the first UK representatives of an international hip hop competition in over 18 countries called HipFest. I produced, as InfoMotion Worldwide, my company, we produced a crew. I paid for it myself with my own peas. We brought over two B-boys from Seoul Mavericks, the top UK B-boy crew, and two B-boys from South Korea to compete in the competition. That was one of the highlights for me of how we can crown hip hop again and in how it brings the culture together. We made it to the semifinals only to be beaten by Predators, the top crew in Russia. Yes, I was judging the showcase battles, crowning people and being, you know, like crowning people the champions of a category. I was signing and it said, you are the UK representative. I am the London. But imagine, you know, that's the revolution. That for me, yeah, is the real renaissance, you know. I'm there sitting in Asia, in Vietnam, signing some paper saying, I represent London, United Kingdom. A black Korean with a multicolored jacket representing London, United Kingdom, in Vietnam, on Vietnamese TV. And being able to bring B-Boys over to rep the UK scene. You know, for me, I give homage to where my artistry has been able to take me across the world. And I know it's going to take me to many more places.
Yeah, while you were doing all that, you were curating the Hip Hop Palace. You were performing with your band, Solar Plexus. What else, bro?
Oh, my God.
Shows for... What was that? What was the show we did when I... the first show that we did as well that you curated. Doing all these things, man.
Yeah, Mantra Festival. Mantra. You know, it's and you know what? I'd say, like, on a most blessed level, is because I am a child of culture. I'm a child of hip hop. I'm a child of Africa, and where I can really work with this integration of my spiritual awareness, it awakens these notions that know where my strengths are and what has built my strengths, my tools that I can use to remind people of this, the real truth of life, you know, the joys of life, the bounty of seeing someone who is usually like closed up in their body and suddenly goes through an experience at a hip hop palace at Underbelly, which big up, the first time hip hop has ever been represented. Hip hop, cabaret, circus, one of the big cons. You know what? Man paid for all of them things myself, yeah? Because I didn't rely on institutions to give me the money to support my dreams. I made it happen because I believed in the culture so much. I wanted to source these funds ourselves. And it reminds you, you know, like, where there's a will, there's a way. If it is divinely, if it is a divine order and it will help culture and it will uplift the love, know that the Creator and Almighty has your full fallback, and it would not give you the vision unless you had the power to bring it forth into your reality.
Yeah, let's talk about that, man. Let's talk a bit about the spiritual aspects of Mufti, man. So, like, let's start off with. So we entered the Lion's Gate, yeah, this last weekend. Tell me a bit about that. So last year, when it was Lion's Gate, I experienced it. I mean, I don't know what I experienced, but I felt it. I felt that awakening, that change. But this year, I don't know if I was like switched off or whatever, but like, what is it? Can you explain like what it means? What is this all about?
So, give thanks to the Lion Spirit, because that's also another moment where we meet each other. Brother Lion, I see you in all your ferocity and all your fierceness. We are here to not play small anymore. We are allowing our mane to be experienced, because it is part of the vein in which we deliver our medicine. It's through our blood, it's through our spirit, it's activated there. So Lion's Gate. Lion's Gate. Let's take a moment for that one. So Lion's Gate, yeah. And it's really powerful what you just said now. Like, Lion's Gate is a celestial alignment, a moment where there's a convergence between the powers of the cosmos. We are connecting from our sun that exists in our universe to Sirius Sun, the most powerful sun that exists in our cosmos. There is an alignment directly from that source of energy, the biggest sun in our cosmos, aligning with our sun in an alignment of 8-8, which is, if you turn it on its side, infinity, which is calling in the prosperity of our abundance to be seized in these moments. That is an alignment that comes through. And of course, what happens with the sun? We are photosynthesized. So this power emerges us. It allows us to blossom in our own being. And it's a great time for you to harness the creative ability, harness the force that emerges from our expression, harness the visions and intentions that have been given to us and how we can feel that we are worthy of them. We are deserving of this power that has been given to us and that we can see actualized in our being. And for some people last year, you know, it was a powerhouse of showing up and being like, cool, I'm ready to take this stage of my career. I'm ready to take this stage of my journey. I know that this power is coming from myself, you know, and it really is that. It's the photosynthetic process that goes, yeah, that power is in my being and I'm channeling this from my own being. But this year, what was so special, and as you just beautifully mirrored to me, brother, is that there was a purification that emerged, you know, and I know full well part of the journey you have been on has been returning to your pure essence, has been returning to the purity of your being and how you can experience reality and the richness that is around you without needing any substance, any of those mechanisms that we use to cope with it, but to experience the full richness that is alive and the vitality. And that's very much something that I took on in myself. Even, I was in Glastonbury.
Yeah, even just justification for it, you know what I mean?
100%. It's true, bro, because it's like, how many people are justifying the
my existence, you know, trying to justify your literally.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Mm-hmm. Like, why do I need to justify my existence to everyone else? I'm here. You know what I'm saying? I'm here, man. I'm fucking living, bro. You know what I'm saying? I'm here. Enjoy every aspect of living. Do you know what I mean? This podcast for me is like an extension of who I am, because for so long I was only focused on music and trying to make it in the music industry and be an engineer, be a producer, whatever. And I'm like, no, man, I'm a spiritual being. I love sport. I love music. I love science. I love the arts. I love culture. I love, you know, there's so many aspects. I love my family. I love my kids. You know what I mean? Like finding ways to express that and be conscious of every single moment and be content within every single moment instead of constantly having this like, oh, I should be studying, I should be practicing, I should be doing this right now, I should be, I haven't achieved what I wanted to achieve, oh, I'm getting older, blah, 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 all these things that plague your mind unnecessarily. And just, you know, that's why when that Lionsgate happened last year, I felt like I was entering into, I don't know, like that night when I was in bed, it's like I could see that celestial alignment, bro. It was powerful, like, for me. And and now I mean the last year has been, it's been amazing. Even through all this pandemic and stuff, like for me, it's been like a beautiful experience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So with you, that, man. What do you like in terms of spirituality? You're not obviously, I mean, you're not Christian, you're not Buddhist, you're not whatever. What is your?
But give thanks, you know what I mean? Like, man, I come from the African spirituality, and you know that in itself is the African mama that holds all of us. We return back to the source of our existence. It is a supreme consciousness in itself. It is a root that everyone must return to. But what you were saying before is very powerful, because it's a time of integration. You know, it feels like very much last year was a time of acceleration and everything is still accelerating. But this Lionsgate has been about the integration, coming to the purer aspects of our being. How can we be truly grateful for every aspect that shows us how rich, how much we can taste the colors that exist in our reality? How can we be filled by that? How can we truly taste our own being? And that sometimes means we have to take away some of the distractions that try to muddy our tastes. So I deeply resonate with that, fam. And but yeah, man, I said, honestly, in terms of spirituality, I had to come full circle. You know, I went through the journey of the medicine wheel, we'd say, going through the shamanic path, you know, doing things like plant medicines, grandmother Aya, grandfather's Esampero, Wachuma. But then also knowing that as I stretch my being in these all these different aspects, there is a place that I was born through, a place that was anointed through in my family, which is being a child of God, another manifestation of the divine. And then the aspects of adolescence can sometimes mean that you fight that level of
that responsibility.
You know what I mean? And it is a sense of responsibility as well, deeply, you know?
Yeah, you fight there's because you want to be free, you want to be Muti, you want to do whatever you want when you want. And in terms of universal law, that's, you have to respect, you know what I mean? You have to give thanks to the mother and, you know, be guided by her as well, you know? Allow that spirit to guide you through this process of duality and existence that we, you know, the trappings of Maya, as it's, you know what I mean, in the Eastern.
Yeah, church. Deeply. And returning back to the sovereign is very much a time of feeling the soul sovereignty of our expression and knowing that that in itself is one of the purest gifts we can give unto the earth. Our expression, our voice, our dance, the things that we return back to, we have to remember, you know, the parts of our being that we have almost sacrificed being in society and adapting to and giving up some of these, you know, cultural these cultural ways of meeting other people, drinking, coming back to the sense of the sacred elements of our being and atoning to your temple, knowing that your body is your temple. And it really,
I don't think there's anything wrong with those, like, doing whatever you want to, because, like, that is your right on this earth. You know what I mean? There's no, like, I mean, like, I feel
there shouldn't be, like, any case where, like, someone can say, no, my way is better than another way. It's just really understanding what your higher self is calling into you and not ignoring those signals.
Yeah.
If you're working with spirit, if you're working with your spiritual awareness, you need to be able to have a capacity of reflection. And once you reflect on these natures, you go, right, I'm going to make an integration. It means that I'm not going to return back to that same cycle, because that's your karmic loop. You're in that karmic loop, that feedback loop will keep taking you to the same lessons. And until you can overcome them, you'll be incarnated. You'll return and you'll go through them things again. But who's got time to be doing them things again? You know what I mean?
I was speaking to my brother about that last night, because we were talking about reincarnation, and like he was like, he likes the idea of it, and he hopes that it's true. Like, both of us have been delving a lot in, like, Eastern philosophy for the last however many years, specifically to do with, like, Indian mysticism and, you know, the Vedas and the Bhagavad Gita and that type of stuff. So, what I was saying, to me, it makes a lot of sense, like, the whole understanding of reincarnation, because for me, it's like working out your karma throughout your existence in different shells makes more sense to me than a finite number of people only being allowed into this kingdom of heaven, as it's so called. You know what I mean? Whereas with yoga or spiritual practice and working out this karma through learning and understanding your being, as you say, through doing spiritual practice like yoga, pranayama, meditation, whatever, blah, 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 and going through these cycles of birth and death until you reach that state of samadhi or nirvana, and enter union or yoga with your creator. I don't know, for me that resonates with my spirit, and like it makes a lot of sense, because even on earth we're gonna go through those cycles. I know personally I've done that so many times. You go through, you stop smoking, you start smoking, you stop doing weed, you go back to weed, drink, whatever. And for me, I still feel growth, and I still feel like the more I learn and the more spirituality I get into, the more I become accepting of those moments and those lapses when you do go through those times of, I don't even call it falling, it's just moving back into those cycles or those bad habits or whatever and stuff like that, because you start to understand yourself better, so you recognize it when it does happen. You're like, okay, that was a moment, I enjoyed it, but I'm not going to spend my whole week beating myself up because I've done this, whatever. I'm just going to keep going through my same routines, waking up, doing my meditation, doing my yoga, whatever. And that helps you get through, you know, those moments and life, because it's never ending. For me, I don't feel there's anything like being perfect or the perfect way or the right way or the right religion. For me, the only thing that's perfect is death. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I see things. I mean, like, I mean, I don't know what your perspective is.
Yeah, definitely. The only thing that is promised is death. And once we can come to a sense of acceptance in that, then we experience life with such more reverence.
Yeah.
There was a lot of crusaders in their time that knew going into these ecstatic trance states was a way for them to transcend some of the lower astral aspects of their desires. And when they realized they could reach these states of consciousness without needing these other properties like drinking and da-da-da-da-da, they realized that that they had everything they wished for that was already inside of them. They just had to remember that sense of experience. Mm. And that's why we have these like breakthroughs of like the psychedelic renaissance. So you can lift yourself on a higher altitude and arrive into a space where it's like, oh, this is what it's like operating on this frequency. This is what this awareness does to me. Oh, snap, there's so many more colors and there's so much more I'm hearing in my inner ear, in my reality. Now, boom, you come out of that, you experience yourself like, oh, I'm back into this. This normal world, you know, and then it's like, how can you access this, you know, these transcendent God states, you know? It's funny, you know, a lot of people have these moments with the psychedelics and they go and they're like, oh my God, I'm at the top of a mountain, I'm a golden god, only to deter themselves to go like, actually I only achieved that through drugs.
Yeah.
Because they don't believe that they can actually sustain that level of vibration in themselves, because obviously we are made in the eyes of the creator. We are all children of God. And if you see that, you recognize the ability to be a creator in your reality and that everything is a reflection of your vibration. And when you recognize that, it's like, okay, so what am I putting into me that's really encrypting my vibration and attracting the reality that either I choose to or I'm either unconscious of, you know what I mean? So it's really about how much conscious ability, how much conscious intent can we bring to certain aspects of our life so we can attract the most highest and emergent timeline that we wish to call forth for our journey in life. And that simply just goes through these, as you're saying, these cyclical forms of like, you know, if you see it, you know, you see the energy patterns of the world and you see there's this toroidal form where the energy can recharge like this. We can work with that as well in our Kundalini and our own toroidal field. But then if you see that there's these middle points, you can either have these downward spirals, you know, that spiral outwards and you're too diverse, you stretch, or you can have these upward spirals that's like, hey, I'm building a certain traction and momentum that allows me to attract much more possibility in my sense of manifestation, my sense of embodied truth in my manifestation. And when you realize that radius of what you are able to start to attune to, and you realize also what you need to sustain that level of attunement, that's really what it is. It's about sustaining that frequency.
Yeah, because that comes with awareness. I mean, once you find that awareness, because like I feel that there's definitely place for psychedelics, you know, those psychedelic trips, ayahuasca, San Pedro, all that stuff. But in the same way, like I feel like you can actually reach those states through meditation and yoga as well. But then in the same breath as well, when you reach those states, like you said, you can go and meditate in an ashram for a year or whatever in India. When you come back to London now, you're going to be back in the city. So you need to find a way to maintain that awareness and to understand that life is everything. Life is the fast-paced society. Life is the people swearing and being whatever. But how do you, within your consciousness and your awareness, allow what you've learned to resonate outward and become a part of this? You have to live within this duality. Do you know what I mean? And you have to be content, whatever the circumstances, as it says in the Bible, you know what I mean? Like this is the key, because I find so many people, they either become too, I'm a spiritual guru, yeah, I can't, like, and then when you take them to the hood or whatever, and they're like, oh, this is messing with my vibe right now, like, nah, bro, this is life in its essence. And the same with like psychedelics, or they become dependent on it, you know, like, oh, I have to get into that state every single time now in order to feel and calm. It's such a fine balance, but each person has to find their own way out and through those experiences to that state of consciousness.
Well, exactly this, you know, everything exists in a wavical form. If you look also in now some of the greater advancements of how quantum physics, mechanics, the shift that has occurred that can bring some of the understandings of Eastern mysticism and Western philosophy into a new terrain where you can experience yourself and go like, rah, this is that spirituality, but it's science. It's the new earth science. Oh, what does this mean? Oh, I'm experiencing that I have the ability to create my reality. Yeah, we have the construction kits. We need to exchange these. And this is why also I started the Festival Currency of Consciousness to be this new intersection between science, spirituality, and live performance art, because there is this phenomena that we're experiencing with these altered states of consciousness. As you say, you know, we can arrive there with pranayamic breathing. We can arrive there. That's been going on for way back. But then the thing is, yeah, if you look at the spiritual ability, that if you look back in time as well, if you look at the spiritual ability that the Tibetan monks achieved in their heightened states of consciousness, the purification they went to, the ideas that they could levitate, the ideas that they could fast, they could be meditating for over like 10 to 100 years to slow down their aging process. Like if you comprehend the level of intent and attention they brought to their presence to sustain that, but then at the same time saw that a bunch of young Chinese kids with metal bullets and guns were able to come down and tear down these monks and spray them down. It's like, you have to understand that there's the cycles that repeat themselves in humanity's history where you can achieve a certain level of spiritual integrity, but you will still be at threat from these other people who are in their own survivalist journey. And it's like, how do you meet this? Just because you have a spiritual awareness doesn't mean that you can say that you're better or think that you are more than another being, because ultimately, if that time comes, that time comes. And it's just about how you face that moment. It's talking about the Khazars, who in Eastern Europe were seen as some of the most spiritual beings. And they were part of the Gnostics, and they had incredible chants that a lot of people have lost now. And that vibration in itself was so pure and so true that the Spanish Armada decided, like, yo, these guys are a threat because they're seen as a spiritual powerhouse. So much so that anywhere they went to, the Cathars, any city they went to, was able to put their own lives in front of theirs and say, yo, these are such spiritual light and channels that we are willing to put our life on the line for them. The Spanish Armada still saw that as a threat, and they were willing to go and lock them into one of their last castles and go and try and invade some of their strongholds. But what did they do? They realized, no, I'm not going to go bleeding into that dying night. I will be the abiding light. So what did they do? They got themselves so activated. They got themselves so into an altered state of consciousness with their chant. They were in such a trance-like ecstatic state, these ecstatic states that we talked about. And what did they do? They jumped themselves into the blazing fire. They jumped themselves into the fire. They were not waiting for death to come knocking at their door and decapitate them against their own will. They took charge of their own reality and said, wow, if I will go into this dying night, know that I'll be raging in my own being. That they will not be succumbed to the other aspects of control or penetration, which is the old aspects of the masculine orientation of the world, the old energetic contracts that wanted to create oppression and control, the ones that have been enslaving some of these earth energies in a way. They knew to transcend that, because they knew ultimately, if they were in their last moments, the same way we can reference, yeah, pop culture, right? You go pop culture. You look at Titanic, right? You look at Titanic, the moment they recognized that they were all going to crash. You look at the story of Titanic. They were all about to, they recognized that there's a big iceberg. They're all about to crash. And what happened? There's not enough lifeboats. There's not enough life jackets for all the people. What do they say? Women and children first. So what do you do in that moment? Are you going to go here and you're going to scramble against other people, fight for other people for your own survival? Or are you going to do what you came here for, to enjoy the purities of life? So what happens? The musicians, they decide to do, one of the ninth symphonies that was an ode to an artistry to God. And they decided to play a symphonic melody. Yeah, they decided to play one that was an ode to the catharticness. Because I can drop a little reference in there later on when I can't remember the specific one, but it was, they realized, they're like, well, if we're going to die, we're going to do the thing that we came here to do. And it's the same thing with the Khazars. You know, it's like, I'm going to go out into that dying night by my own being, by the raging of my own being. I'm going to go out in that dying night by the essence that I came here to alight, illuminate into these spaces. The same way you talk about Dead Poets Society, like one of the most classic films, bro, that reminded people of the conservative nature of institutions and how, you know, what they say, Robin Williams, he has this whole thing. He's like, yeah, math, science, that's all good. But poetry, art, these are the noble pursuits of what we call living, you know? And you have to ask yourself, what are these essences that you live for in your life? And there's a moment where, like, in that film, a girl, she ends up having her own turmoil. She ends up getting, you know, she has her own encounter with rape. And one of the other guys who is mistaken for one of the troublemakers, that he ends up dying. But what happens is that those boys in the classroom, in knowing full well that they are in breach of what the institution is trying to control in them and trying to obstruct them and say, like, no, you know that, you know, we're going to try and fit you back into this box of control, they decide to step onto their desks. They decide to, there's this beautiful reference point, like, I would love to drop an image in there. They decide to jump on their desk. Why? To create a reverence to what Robin Williams as a teacher meant to them, full well knowing that they would actually get in trouble, full well knowing that they will actually potentially impede their education or how their preparatory school and what their parents have put money into to support them. They will break through that seal. They'll break through those conditions to create an honorship, to create an ode to the ecstatic trance of what this being brought resonance into their life, what is being illuminated in their perceptual means. And that's where we ask ourselves in this current time, what are we willing to actually transcend? And by transcend, I mean, what are we willing to die for? What are we willing to kill our own notion of safety, of comfort? These essences that we feel, oh shit, this is where I have to keep myself. What are we willing to transcend in that aspect to be born again so that we can be the living essence of what we really came here for? What we came to be an incarnation of what spirit intended for us for. We are in trying times in this moment. We are experiencing things like the BLM. We're experiencing things like Extinction Rebellion, all these notions where our race, our freedom is being brought into question. And in these moments, like, yo, like I look at myself and I go, yo, I'm a warrior in this game. Who is here on the front line with me? Because I know I'm willing to die for my art. I'm willing to die for what my essence and my being is here to do, because I know that that will echo way beyond time, way beyond this timeline, the same way the Cathars and the Gnostics, they ecstatically brought themselves into trance, which we still remember to this day. We still remember to this day, the same way we understand that some of these echoes in history, they transcend their own timeline and become a lesson, a cyclical lesson to humanity and what its net notion of control previously is, these old vibrations, and how we must transcend them to really respond to the sense of living, the yeah. sense of being alive.
I think of...
What does life mean to you guys? What does it mean to y'all?
You know what picture that brings to mind for me is, do you know the cover of a Rage Against the Machine album? With a Buddhist monk that set himself on fire.
Oh yeah, 100%.
That's
and it's that exact same notion, you know. I love this beautiful quote that comes from what's it called? It's from the what's his name? Oh, it's the writer who wrote Charlotte's Web, and he said, "I wake up in the morning with the desire to save the world, but also savor the world." And he asked himself, what must I do in this moment? And he responds with, I must savor the world, for if I do not, how can I know what I came here to save? So, you know what I'm saying? And this is it. It's like, we must experience the true essence of life. We must experience what these notions of sacredness, this notion of love,
yeah,
these essences of our dharma, you know, these essences of what we are, or what we really in our own bodhisattva journeys, these journeys of meeting our enlightened state, these sentient pathways to our own journey of this vertical access. Once we arrive in that state, we must bring these pieces back through the tunnel that we came. so that we can bring it back to the grassroots level and begin to share that with people, not by the sense of looking down to people, but from the ground level and smiling through this so that it can uproar through the roots and then allow the same process of the branches, the leaves, to experience the photosynthesis of our life that we bring back from the corners of the cosmos, the corners of these lion's gates, these corners of the Sirius star, this solar source within our beings, and know that we are another mirroring of this energy, and know that we came here to be the embodiment of this for humanity.
Jeez. Bro, on that note, man, I think we should... That was beautiful, bro. I think, I think that encapsulates the conversation, and we should kind of just close up. But before we do that, man, just tell us what you're doing. Where, I mean, I'm going to put some links. I'll put some nice, throw some things in there. Where can people find out, like, Wagwan for Moti, and what are you doing? Anything in the lockdown?
Thank you, firstly, my brother, for even instigating that sense of conversation with me, because, you know, it's very much in this time, how can we bring a practical aspect to spirituality? And I'm asking myself in this time, you know, what more can I do for my people? How can I be a change I wish to see in the world? And that's asking me in this scale between, am I in survival mode or am I in service? And this is the psychosynthetic process that we're on right now, the synthesis of our beings. So where am I? Right now, we're here for the New Earth Alliance. We are here to reclaim some of these disused spaces to enable them to be vibrant community centers, to offer these alternative modalities, creative development, to regenerate culture. This is a seed of consciousness that will be here in London. Along with doing this art, bruv, we are here for the Renaissance. You know what I'm saying? Muti and the Solar Plexus is coming back in a very major way. We are going to be reforming the musical industry. I'm creating some next level tracks with my brother Solar Kid here right now. When I die is in the building. You know what I'm saying? Because we're here to transcend this. We're here to transcend this. In terms of my, you know, we're here for that. In terms of my movement capacity, information, this performance company, a multidisciplinary radical performance company, we're here harnessing creativity for social change. Look out for the events like the Flow Kitchen, Primordial Soup, Open Mic for the New Earth. Look out for what we're doing. I've just been in touch with some of the people at XR, and they've asked me to do a mass flash mob in September, where they're going to be trying to close down Parliament. And I'm going to be getting neighboring organizations to involve themselves in a collective dance. We've been working on this track that's with some incredible Indian, classical Indian musicians that have made this track. And we intend to make this a flash mob, a global movement. So it's really about taking this information, about taking this medicine movement to the masses and allowing it to be these touch points for society to reconnect with their sense of power, reconnect with their sense of purpose. There's information, there's, yes, the movement practice, living form, information, Qigong. Expect a four-day movement camp, a sacred integration for anyone who wants to rebalance themselves, conjure what their power really means to them and how they can catalyze their creative capacity in the 2020 going forward in this renaissance. That is going to be happening in the park with sticks, with training, using breath as a vehicle. The music is coming back in a big way. New Earth is going to be bringing a form of world tour show. We are here to bring it's New Earth. All I can say in the best way is it's New Earth, it's new music, it's new church, it's new movements. The light works, the light's movement. It's taking form. Let's start a movement. And that's New Earth. We're here to align with it. So if you align with New Earth, let me know, because we're calling in all the artists in this renaissance. It doesn't stop here. It is a new church. It's a new technology for transformation, an application for the elevation. So if you feel elevated, if you feel ready for this renaissance and you feel called to that, reach out to me, Muti Mutso Lace 3 on Instagram, Motivation Activations for the Nation, Quantum Alchemist, 5D Activations, Planetary Architecture is taking place. We are healing timelines in this lifetime. Why? Because it matters now. We must be the change you wish to see in the world. And it does take a village to raise a child. And the village is here for you. Currency of consciousness, 21st of September, we're going to be in three spaces for that. We're going to be doing an incredible cycle that's going to be going through. This is just coming today. We've got permission to be on the mayor's calendar to do a cycle from Hackney Downs all the way to Brondesbury Park and end with a live show. And we're going to create stations in Brondesbury Park, Hampstead Heath, Canonbury, where people are going to be stopping off and having these exchanges within their toolkit so they can upgrade their construction kit, how they build their reality. We are creating practical spirituality. We are creating ways for people to integrate their power and actualize it through their actions. It requires us to step forward and be the light bearers that we are. So all them light warriors out there, I'm calling on you. Find me. Speak into your visions, into your intentions, because we are waiting. We are waiting to raise and empower them, water them with our own photosynthesis, because we are the light and we experience our own light. And we ain't afraid to shine, baby, because that's what we're designed for.
Done that. I'm going to make sure all those links are in the description for everybody that is that wants to get involved with Muti and InfoMotion and the new Earth. Thank you so much, my bro. The other side of the sun. Thank you for coming to the other side of the sun, cuz.
The sun!
Those of you... Yes. I'm going to have a subscribe. Don't forget, link in the description. Like, subscribe, follow this page. There's going to be some more interesting guests. And today, thank you so much to my brother Muti. Blessings and love, light, peace and respect, my brother.
Radical, fierce love, people. We are rising in our lifetime. Know your power. Know your presence. This is up to us. Be the change you wish to see in the world. I love you.